Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Thursday, May 6th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Scott.
And I'm Molly Jackson.
Joshua Nelson worked hard to get into college. The senior at St. Charles West High School has excellent grades and is a three-year varsity basketball player, a huddle leader for Fellowship of Christian Athletes, a member of the National Society of Black Engineers, president of his school's Multicultural Achievement Committee, and a tutor at the Boys and Girls Clubs of St. Charles County. So, it's not too surprising that last week he was awarded a full ride to Southeast Missouri State University on a president's scholarship. But as impressive as that may be, it's the 18-year-old's response to getting the scholarship that's turning heads. He's now giving away the $1,000 he'd saved for college. Josh is setting up a scholarship for one of his classmates, and he's inviting others to match his gift. Talk about acing the character test. At his age, I could always find a way to spend $1,000 on my car, my girlfriend, a ski trip, you name it. Not Josh. He's the student who teaches by example. A young man who already understands that you gain the most by giving. Honestly, it makes me feel on top of the world, he told KSDK-TV in St. Louis, adding, "The fact that I can just help somebody a little bit makes me feel great. And I really want to see other people succeed." Now, to today's stories. Our first story. The Trump loyalty test continues to play a key role in the Republican Party. And our reporter finds that allegiance appears to be based on a foundation of falsehoods.
The GOP's move to oust Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming from its leadership ranks for rejecting the false belief that the 2020 election was fraudulent appears all but certain. It is also just the latest example of the big lies spread. In Arizona, a recount sponsored by state Republicans is apparently looking at bizarre conspiracy theories of votes shipped in from Asia. State voting bills, such as the one passed recently in Georgia, would allow more direct partisan legislative control of election machinery. In statements and public appearances, former President Donald Trump continues to insist, without hard evidence, that the election was stolen from him. He is solidifying his hold over the GOP and pushing aside such discordant voices as Representative Cheney. And he appears to be setting up a situation where, in future elections, one party may question the legitimacy of any vote it loses. David Carroll is a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland, College Park. He says, "In a macro sense, a country in which election results remain controversial months after it's over, that's a country that's in trouble." This story was reported by Peter Greer for The Monitor.
Do you want fries with that FAFSA form? Our reporter finds colleges are battling inequality by trying new, creative ways, like drive-thrus, to encourage parents and students to apply for financial aid.
College counselors are hoping to avoid more undergraduate enrollment dips, so they have hustled students through application cycles, cueing new urgency in completing forms for financial aid. College access groups are offering innovative ways to tackle the complex free application for federal student aid. Approaches to overcoming barriers include drive-through help, virtual guidance, hotlines, and incentives like gift cards and free meals. Most American students must complete the form, called FAFSA for short, to finance their college education. Less than half of the high school class of 2021 completed the FAFSA by April 23rd. That's a 6.1% drop compared with this time last year, according to the National College Attainment Network. Low-income and high-minority schools show larger declines in completion than other schools. Still, the gap is narrowing incrementally. For federal aid consideration for the 2021-22 academic year, students must file the FAFSA by June 30th, 2022. Students should complete paperwork as early as possible, but it's never too late, says Rachel Gentry, Assistant Director of Federal Relations for the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. She adds, "We want to ensure that students are able to access every dollar, every ounce of financial aid that they're eligible for." This story was reported by Sarah Matusik in New York for The Monitor.
The Biden administration promises a foreign policy based on morals, protecting human rights and political freedoms, for example. But as our columnist observes, North Korea and Afghanistan suggest the limits of that approach.
As President Joe Biden takes on a pair of foreign policy challenges that have bedeviled the United States for two decades, Afghanistan and North Korea, he is adopting a policy with a long history, realpolitik. Not the 19th century German version, which came to imply hard-nosed pursuit of national interests, regardless of moral concerns, but a new iteration, being realistic about the limits to Washington's unilateral power in today's world. The U.S. military presence in Afghanistan and efforts to denuclearize North Korea have not had their intended effects, so Mr. Biden is trying more modest, measured, and longer-term moves involving U.S. allies. But his main international preoccupation is a reinvigoration of democratic governance in the face of increasingly assertive autocratic regimes such as China. He is gathering support for such an initiative amongst U.S. friends around the world. The intended message of this new brand of realpolitik is that America is trying to defend democracy, not that it is abandoning its values. But the question remains, where does that policy leave such values in places like Afghanistan? This commentary was written by Ned Temko in London for The Monitor.
Our reporter talks to Latin American women who counter expectations about their graceful and delicate needlecraft. Yes, it's still beautiful, but in their stitches are words of defiance, protests against violence, and demands for progress.
Embroidery has a long history in the Americas, a profession once reserved for men, later foisted onto women as a symbol of domesticity. But in recent decades, women have reclaimed the craft as a tool for peaceful, powerful protest, even amid the pandemic. Just this week, after Mexico City metro cars crashed when an overpass collapsed, embroidery in honor of victims appeared online. Punctuated by orange and green lines, the same colors as the metro, it read, "Corruption kills." Other artists use needlework to call attention to femicide, the ongoing legacy of colonization, or to encourage others to reclaim their history. There's irony, some artists say, in using something so often associated with meekness to send messages of anger and empowerment. Maria Belén Tapia de la Fuente is a Chilean living in Madrid. She joined a group of women she met online during the pandemic to talk about the power of embroidery as a political tool. She explains, "When you embroider, you often have to undo earlier stitches. We are undoing the stitches that society has sewn to create the current world, full of violence and inequality." And, she adds, "stitching our own stories instead." This story was reported by Whitney Ulick in Mexico City for The Monitor.
Art can give us a different perspective on nature and ourselves. In today's photo essay, we see whimsy, joy, and vibrancy in the works of Japanese artist Yayoi Kusama. Check out this photo essay by going to csmonitor.com/daily. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on Iraq's aid for wartime rape survivors. Over four decades, the people of Iraq have experienced four wars. The last one was against the Islamic State Group, or ISIS, between 2014 and 2019. Now a struggling democracy, Iraq recently became a world leader in trying a new concept in ensuring peace. It is restoring the dignity of thousands of survivors of sexual violence. In March, Iraqi lawmakers voted to compensate women and girls, mainly from the Yazidi religious minority, who were enslaved, raped, and sold by ISIS. These survivors will soon start to receive a plot of land, housing, education, and a quota for jobs in government. The reparations are designed to heal individual trauma, reintegrate the survivors into society, and address any social stigma from their experience. The peace part of the Yazidi Survivors Law lies in turning disgrace into grace. It assists survivors in trading an impression of victimhood for a renewal of their lives, fostering a message that wartime rape does not change someone's inherent value. The compensation, said Iraqi President Barham Saleh, helps them to achieve the social and economic life that befits them. That's our news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Come back tomorrow. We're working on a story about the U.S. waiving the intellectual property rights of vaccine makers, a change that may allow more production of COVID-19 vaccines. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor writes that, at times, safety can seem precarious. But in God, there's a powerful basis for protection. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Finally, a grace note of gratitude to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton, Jessica Mendoza, and Ibrahim Onofeko.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.